Welcome to 40A&M N5, a download of 40A&M LLC, recorded at 2200 Eastern on Sunday, July 28th. I'm Chris Bohm, and here is our weekly selection of tech sector and related global news and policy highlights from the past week. Coming up, who will replace Ben Bernanke as chairman of the Federal Reserve, and why has this question become so heated in Washington? A master key vulnerability is identified in the Android operating system, and Google works quickly to remedy it. A key European index shows some promise for the Eurozone economy in the third quarter of this year. Dell Computer again delays a shareholder vote on Michael Dell's bid to take back the company he founded. And the ins and outs of cloud-based services for small business, some key things to think about. And finally, actor Gina Davis is profiled by NPR to discuss her efforts on behalf of women in film, a message that she has taken all the way to Paris and the OECD. But first, the Associated Press reported on Friday, July 26th, that the White House has decided to delay until the fall any decision on who might replace Ben Bernanke as chair of the Federal Reserve. For some, the debate, particularly over the past few weeks, as to whether the frontrunner to replace Mr. Bernanke is Janet Yellen or Larry Summers, has been particularly intense. As suggested by Ezra Klein of the Washington Post, the decision to put off the decision until the fall may be an attempt to have things cool down. The latest and most significant salvo in this back and forth came last week when a third of the Senate Democrats signed a letter to President Obama endorsing Janet Yellen for chair. Although if you read the financial blogosphere, it may be hard to discern whether these folks find the letter to be more of a vote against other potential frontrunners or truly a vote for Ms. Yellen. Janet Yellen is one of the key engineers of the Federal Reserve's current strategy of pairing monthly bond purchases with forward guidance to explain to the markets the potential future path of monetary policy. By contrast, Mr. Summers has largely been quiet on the issue of monetary policy direction in recent past, perhaps to preserve flexibility in positioning for a potential nomination as chair. Others have certainly taken note of the Yellen strategy and its potential implications in globally interconnected financial markets. European Central Bank Chairman Mario Draghi, only 2 weeks ago, issued a two-sentence statement on the European Central Bank's own thoughts regarding a longer-term bond-buying strategy, a statement it also termed as forward guidance, and brand-new policy initiative for the bank. The Washington Post has reported that Fed watchers expect Fed officials to discuss at their July 30th and 31st meeting whether to refine or revise their upcoming forward guidance, perhaps that Yellen has already been engaged in elements of policymaking that indicate sea changes for the world's most watched central bank. This is not to say that the Fed, nor any central bank for that matter, will, with occasional discussion of forward-looking guidance, signal that they are lifting the veil on internal board decision-making in any appreciable way. But only one need look back 15 years to discern that such a small change is indeed a shift, to the days when Alan Greenspan would report in February and July to the House and Senate on the state of the economy and masterfully leave everyone in the room feeling as if they'd heard something momentous, but in actuality, you left with little new detail. To what extent that important policymaking shifts like this, though largely unknown to most of the world, will factor in choosing a next chair remains to be seen. As reported this past week by Ezra Klein in the Washington Post, there is a feeling that the chair of the Fed can do more if he or she is truly trusted by the markets. And rightfully or wrongfully, there is a sense that Larry Summers has the market's trust. And also, this White House not only knows Summers well, but as Klein suggests, it is comfortable with how he handles a crisis. However, that sense that Mr. Summers may have gravitas with the markets and the administration did not seem to sway many key Senate Democrats engaged in passage of Dodd-Frank. In 2010, Mr. Summers was opposed to the so-called Volcker Rule. The Volcker Rule was a specific provision in the Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act that ostensibly limited banks from making certain kinds of speculative investments that would not benefit their customers. The Volcker Rule limited proprietary trading, or the use of deposits by banks to trade on their own accounts, although there are exceptions to this under Dodd-Frank as well. The debate over this specific provision left some in the Senate speculating over Mr. Summers' willingness to engage in financial regulation. As pointed out in numerous articles by The Post, The Wall Street Journal, and New York Times over the past week, There is a sense that the Obama administration prides itself on picking the best person for the job, regardless of gender, and is willing to take heat for gender imbalances in the wake of a decision. However, as Mr. Klein points out from the Post, there is no doubt that picking Ms. Yellen would break a significant glass ceiling, and with a clearly qualified candidate. Some speculate that the current Yellen versus Summers repartee has actually advanced or re-advanced the potential candidacy of others, perhaps Stanley Fisher of MIT. Fisher has the gravitas of having taught many of our top economists today, including current Fed Chair Ben Bernanke, and was considered a front-runner earlier this year, although some in Congress were reportedly very uncomfortable with Mr. Fisher having for several recent years served as chair of the Central Bank of Israel, despite the track record he left in that post. More to come on this, of course, but according to the Associated Press, we'll have to wait until the fall. The security firm Blue Box announced on July 3rd that it had uncovered a vulnerability in Android's master key, perhaps permitting malicious use of the device's operating system. Google has already moved to address the problem, releasing a patch to manufacturers, which manufacturers must make available to their customers. Also, Google will be scanning its own Play app marketplace for the vulnerability, but this would not protect consumers who download software from other vendors or other stores. As a result, recommendations are that a customer only download applications from reputable Android application marketplaces, a recommendation that is always a good idea for application downloads, regardless of the provider and operating system, but a good reminder here given most recent developments for Android. Although the latest forecasts from the European Central Bank are that the Eurozone economy is to contract by 0.6% over 2013 as a whole, it's projected to recover with growth of 1.1% in 2014. And as reported by the BBC, a key indicator in July has shown its best figure in over a year and a half. The Market Eurozone Purchasing Managers Index, or PMI, which measures business output, was 50.4 in July, up from 48.7 in June, an 18-month high. A score of 50 typically indicates economic expansion. And according to market economist Chris Williamson, who commented to the BBC, it could indicate that the euro area will at long last pull out of recession in the third quarter of this year. Service sector activity continues to fall in June, but the reduction was the smallest in 18 months. And there continues to be a performance gap even among Eurozone members. In addition, continued increases in unemployment, particularly among the youngest citizens, will likely be a key factor with regard to the PMI growth as to whether it's indicative of a true market trend. Dell Computer has announced a second delay last week to a shareholder vote scheduled on the offer by founder Michael Dell and the private equity firm Silver Lake. The revised offer had increased to more than $24.5 billion, and also the bid had proposed changing the way that shareholder votes will be counted, ensuring that voters who abstained from the vote on the bid could not be counted against the deal. Some shareholders have been resisting the proposal, citing that the Dell Silver Lake bid has undervalued the company. The shareholder voting proposal is to be considered by a special committee of independent Dell directors, and without their approval, Michael Dell has said that he would withdraw the offer. Dell's board of directors has postponed the shareholder vote until August 2nd to give adequate time to consider the new proposals. For small and medium-sized businesses, the benefits of cloud computing can be endless, saving businesses time and money by boosting productivity, improving collaboration, and promoting innovation. Cloud hosting facilitates all types of information sharing, such as email services, application hosting, web-based phone systems, data storage, and more. Unlike storing information on your computer or a server in your office, cloud computing stores data on the internet. It works by making information available from a central web-based hub that can give anyone with proper credentials access from any location with an internet connection. The promise of cloud computing is that even if you're away from work or your office server is inaccessible, data in the cloud is always up to date and always available, whenever or wherever. There are certain different types of clouds. For instance, a public cloud service is built upon an external platform run by a cloud service provider. Users get their own cloud within a shared infrastructure. A private cloud service is a cloud platform built within your own hardware and software. And since it is managed by your own internal IT team, it's ideal for businesses that want exclusive access, flexibility, and greater control over their own data. A hybrid cloud combines both of the former, with an organization's IT team managing part of the cloud in-house and outsources parts of it off-site. This might be perfect for a firm that wants exclusive control over business-related data such as customer files, but could relinquish other data to a third party in order to benefit from the cost and manpower savings. The drawbacks of cloud computing are often cited as twofold. First, implementing any new types of technology will require training of personnel, and attention to effective troubleshooting during and after cloud deployment is launched for an organization. Among the most common barriers that small and medium-sized businesses face when considering adoption of a new technology is the cost not only of the technology, of course, but also having the staffing and expertise necessary to manage and make use of it. And a second concern about cloud computing is its security risks, although this concern, to a certain extent, may be driven more by a lack of understanding as to how security is maintained in the cloud. For instance, the Ponemon Institute found that only 29% of organizations have confidence in cloud-based authentication and security of access. Most do require passwords at a minimum and use encryption to protect stored data, but you can also use cloud service tools to lock and wipe lost or stolen devices. Of course, the argument can be made that while some may not understand the cloud, it doesn't mean that they're not using it. After all, a vast array of services fall under the cloud computing umbrella, including hosted email such as Gmail, the Microsoft Office 365 Office Suite, or storage solutions like Dropbox. In addition, many vendors are now developing tailor-made app stores under software-as-a-service models to make it easier for small businesses to pick and choose the best applications to suit their needs and pocketbooks. In particular, Office 365 gives you email, the Office Suite, and the ability to scale up or down without any upfront cost. In a way, use of the cloud is a no-brainer. Storing data online is cheaper and easier than managing local storage for a small business. However, a recent study by PC Magazine found that roughly 46% of smaller businesses don't find public cloud storage as a perfect fit for their solutions because of limited bandwidth and quality of network issues, which in the end has led many of these smaller businesses to seek hybrid on-site and off-site backup and storage. While cloud adoption is ever increasing, small business owners remain cautious and contemplative, as they should be. Even while there's not a full-on frenzy to go cloud, as some industry trade magazines may have us believe, the advantages are there, particularly in terms of cost and software availability, with the latest versions and features. And steadily, these are being recognized. As with any small business decision, a decision whether to go cloud should always begin with what it is that you are trying to accomplish, in business terms, and let that be your guide. Technology only matters if it delivers a measurable benefit, and not just because it's new or popular. Never buy into a technology simply because everyone is talking about it. And in turn, any IT consultants worth their salt should be able to articulate to you in clear terms what the benefit to your business processes and cash flow will be. Also, you should also be asking any cloud service provider where their servers and physical storage is located. Whether this is their own server or services operated on their behalf by a third party. For better or worse, the state of data protection and related laws internationally is such that you will need to have a firm grip on where your data will be stored, even if it is in a technology sense, in the cloud. You can also ask a provider for a copy of their security policy and for details on how they store and protect your data. In the end, ensure that you have a thorough understanding of what information you can't afford to lose. And don't digitize anything and put at arm's length anything that you cannot operate without. At 40A&M, we had a learning experience with this last point in May of this year. Although we do not have all of our IT resources cloud-based, we do have some, including email hosting. However, in May, a hacking incident caused us to lose two pieces of network hardware. And when I say lose, not even the manufacturers could bring these back from the brink. And in addition, A happy coincidence, our hosted email service ceased to function in the same week. We thought it was a corruption in the client software, but it turned out to be merely an internal glitch with our account at the hosting provider. But in the days that it took to work through IT forensics for us to identify the problem, we also initialized non-cloud workarounds to keep business going while the problem was fixed. However, in order to do this, to function if the unthinkable happens, you have to be capable of doing it. Even if it takes hours to develop a workaround in the worst-case scenario, do you have what you need on-site to function? Cloud will save you cash, will give you access to technology and resources, but as a small business owner, you must be ready to operate without it. You can start small. Cloud gives you a chance to try out new services in a low-risk way, and you need not start with big decisions such as whether to migrate email or customer databases. Start small, test out a few applications, then, when you're ready, consider more. But importantly, many organizations are now working to tailor guidance on cloud benefits and use for small and medium-sized businesses. For instance, the Cloud Security Alliance launched a small and medium-sized business working group and membership level in April 2013, aiming to have its version of its Cloud Security Alliance guidelines and documents revised for SMB use by year's end. And finally for this week, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD, has been no stranger to issues of gender and economic advancement. Most recently, at the 2011 Ministerial Council meeting, OECD ministers reaffirmed that women's economic empowerment is critical to stronger, fairer economic growth. And it was in the context of a pre-G20 meeting side event in Paris, Growing Economies Through Women's Entrepreneurship, in October 2011, that I became aware of actor Gina Davis's efforts on behalf of women in film while preparing background materials on the meeting. Years after her Academy Award for The Accidental Tourist, an iconic role in Thelma and Louise, and a brave attempt at helming an action franchise with Cutthroat Island, not a critical favorite among her many films, but one that remains a personal favorite, she took her talents to Olympic-level archery, and more recently, to the think tank that she founded in 2004, her Institute on Gender and Media. Nearly 2 years on from her appearance at the OECD pre-G20 side meeting, National Public Radio spotlighted her efforts in All Things Considered with Jackie Leiden on June 30th. In the NPR piece, Miss Davis talks about the several great tentpole movies for women over the past 15 years, Thelma and Louise, Bridesmaids, The Hunger Games among them, and the fact that these great films have not changed a dynamic where women are still underrepresented, both in front of and behind the camera. Jackie Leiden of NPR goes on to discuss statistics regarding what we watch and why, and how gender plays into our decisions as to what movies we see. The podcast version of the NPR segment, which aired on June 30th, 2013, is available at www.npr.org. And whether, like me, you enjoyed Cutthroat Island, Beetlejuice, or her many other great films, Ms. Davis's work today on these issues is worth a listen. You have been listening to 40 A&M in 5, a production of 40 A&M LLC. For more information, visit 40a-m.com. All stories for this week's podcast were reported by at least two online or print news sources or taken directly from relevant releases, with the exception of specific reporting highlighted from the Associated Press, the BBC, the Washington Post, National Public Radio, and PC Magazine. We will be back with you on Monday, August 5th. Until then, make this week and every week one to remember. And bye for now.